time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, we're going to do things a little differently this morning on Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsborough joins us now. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
So what are we doing this morning?
We've been doing this series for almost 4 years, and in that time we've talked about all kinds of abandoned places around Manitoba. Inevitably, when you talk about places that are abandoned, there's bound to be the odd time that things do change. So I thought it might be a time that we talk a little bit about some of the places that have changed a little bit.
So 4 years, that's before my time here on the Weekend Morning Show. How can people listen to these old episodes if they'd missed them?
Well, I bet you there's a lot of people who don't realize that an audio file for each episode goes on the website of the Manitoba Historical Society. So if you go there, there's a complete archive going back, say, nearly 4 years, every single episode. So if there's anyone in particular that you may have missed, or if you maybe joined this series partway through, you could go to that archive. You can listen to them on your phone, your music player, your computer, your whatever, and you can catch up.
So let's get some updates. And the first update is actually from the first episode that you ever did. And we're almost coming up to the 4 year anniversary with
That's right.
Tell us about which one.
Our very first episode of Abandoned Manitoba back in June of 2015 was a site at Bertel, the site of the Indian residential school that was there. And of course, there is a considerable history attached to that site, as there is with many of the residential schools. And I think it's worthwhile being reminded of that. I've been there several times. Most recently, I was there in November, just a few months ago. The ownership has changed. And in fact, the current owner was willing to let me visit it again. I noticed that there had been considerable deterioration of the site. It was in bad condition when I first visited there. And since then, the owner was telling me he's had a real problem with people stealing metal. I guess there's enough value in recycled metal that they have stripped out the electrical wiring out of the walls. They've stripped out the pipes, the water pipes, the sewer pipes. And that's part of the problem, because in stealing the pipes, they've eliminated any means for the meltwater that's on the roof of the building to be conducted down to the sewers in the basement. So now, instead of going down through pipes, it just pours through cracks in the roof. And that, in turn, has caused dramatic water damage, you know, as you might imagine. So that's not a good sign. So there's a big change. But the other thing that happened when I visited in November, listeners may know that I use a drone to do some of my research, because you can kind of get up in the air and you can see things aerially that you can't see on the ground. Unfortunately, I had a bit of an incident. I clipped a tree, and as you can imagine, in November, it was cold. Well, when plastic hits the ground at high speed in cold weather, it's not good. And I think it's fatal. So my drone is deceased. I'm going to probably end up having to get a new one.
And you also did another episode on something after school rooms that you also enjoyed, grain elevators.
Yeah. I'm fascinated, of course, by the grain elevator. It's a symbol of Prairie Canada. There were, of course, hundreds of them across Manitoba, but their numbers are declining dramatically. And one in particular that has always interested me is one that we talked about back in September of 2015, the Lake of the Woods grain elevator at Elva, down in the southwestern corner of the province. Since I first visited it, I've determined, based on the research I've done, that it is, in fact, the oldest grain elevator in Canada, the oldest one in the entire nation, built in September of 1897. Now, I understand that the owner has passed away recently. The building is somewhat insecure, and it worries me that this, I think, historically significant building may be at risk. So there's the update there.
Now, one of my favorite kind of abandoned Manitobas is when you do the history of a house or a home. And there's one house that you did an episode on, which seemed to have a very dramatic end to it.
Yes, indeed. I talked back in October of 2015 about something called the Lang House. It was a dramatic stone house way out in the middle of a farmer's field. And that was the issue. That was, in fact, the problem, because it was so far out in the farmer's field that if you visited the site when the farmer was growing crops, inevitably you would pass through his crops. And that was a problem, because you would damage his crops. You would destroy the grain that he had grown. And understandably, the farmer wasn't very happy about that. You know, anyone would be upset about that. But on top of that, people would get out to the old house. They would wander around. The building, of course, was old. It had been built in 1897. So it was old. The worry was that it was structurally compromised. And, you know, in theory, if somebody was walking around inside and it collapsed, well, wouldn't you be sad if, you know, you contributed to somebody's being hurt? But the worst sort of indignity, I think, was they would leave garbage behind. You know, they'd leave candy wrappers and pop bottles and, you know, just basically disrespectful of his rights. And he would have to go and clean it all up. So a couple of years ago, he finally burned the building, got rid of all the wooden parts. Then he leveled it with his machinery and the entire building is now gone. It's completely gone. And I use that as, I think, an important lesson, which is, you know, I think it's exciting to go out and visit some of these places that we talk about. But you must do it respectfully. You know, this, a lot of these sites are on private property, you know, and you must be respectful of landowner rights. You know, you can't destroy the farmer's crop. You know, you can't leave open the gate so that their livestock gets out. You can't leave behind garbage. And, you know, and if you do, well, inevitably, it might just destroy the privilege for everybody else that might follow you.
How did you find out about what happened to Lang House?
The owner actually sent me a picture of the house in flames.
Oh, gosh.
And you know, and I understand his motives. I support him entirely. You know, he was entirely within his rights. You know, he had just had enough. You know, it was just too bad. But, you know, there it is. It's a sad story, but I think an important lesson.
Another episode you did a while back was on Port Nelson. What's the update on that?
Right. Yeah. In January of 2016, I talked about this site at the mouth of the Nelson River at where it flows into Hudson Bay. And at that time, when I first talked about it, I had not been there. You know, it's not an easy place to reach. It's, in fact, quite remote. So we ended up taking a boat downriver in the Nelson River from the limestone generating station. It was an incredible ride. There was a fellow that has a very powerful boat that got us down there. We spent about 4 hours wandering around an artificial island about a mile offshore in Hudson Bay. It was so cool. We got to see this railway bridge that connected the artificial island to the mainland. And I had, in fact, originally had visions that I was going to walk across this railway bridge back to the mainland so I could kind of look at things there. 17 spans, it took me an hour to walk just three of them, just because of the degree to which this railway bridge was decomposed. So it was a thrilling experience, but one that I may not get again, because it's just not likely, you know, possible to get there. It's just so remote.
You were in Churchill last summer, and that kind of leads us to the update for this next item.
Yeah, I talked in July of 2016 about HMCS Churchill, Her Majesty's Canadian Station Churchill. Essentially, it was a Cold War spy post. They listened to Soviet radio communications, and if they ever detected that a plane was coming in with a bomb, to bomb North America, they would dispatch the fighter jets to intercept it. Well, it has been closed since the 1960s. And when I was in Churchill last summer, I had an opportunity to wander around to study its unique architecture. It was one of the first buildings designed with the ability to float on top of permafrost so that it wouldn't shift. And so I saw the interesting architecture. I got to see the high security area where they had all the instruments that you could listen to the Soviet communications with. Really, really fun to get this insight into sort of the Cold War history of Canada.
There are so many more updates. We're going to have to do a part two of this, I think, Gordon.
Absolutely. Got lots more.
And next week's going to be a little different. What's the clue?
Next week, I'm going to have a conversation with photographer Pete Ryan. He's going to be in Verdun doing a workshop on how to photograph abandoned structures. Now, what's fascinating about this is that Pete Ryan is a photographer for the National Geographic, and you have to wonder, what would be here in Manitoba that would bring a photographer from the National Geographic?
Gordon, thank you so much.
We'll see you next week.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.